Hey folks, it's John. Welcome back to another episode of Talk to Me in the Car, a podcast about all things teaching related and education inspired that I used to record here in my vehicle on my drive back from work as a high school instructional coach. But now I record on my walks into my neighborhood while I'm just talking because I don't go to work in my car anymore. I work in my couch. I work in my house. Coronavirus has shut us down. So instead of weekly podcasts every Monday, we're doing daily podcasts. We talk about all things related to this new normal of teaching and what to see on the horizon as we talk about how to open schools, maybe what to do with schools, and I don't know what this means for us as teachers and what this means for us as educators. And in George Koros's book, The Innovator's Mindset, he says that phrase that change is the opportunity to do something amazing. Well, here we are. Change is here. So what are we doing? We'll talk about that today with a little bit more detail. Like I said, new episodes every day, about 10 to 15 minutes, depending on how much time I have between Zoom calls. I hope you're well. I hope you're safe. I hope you're staying healthy and staying home, staying away from people. But eventually we're going to get back to work. So what does work look like? Well, that's what this podcast is all about. So new episodes every day. If you like what you're hearing, feel free to like or subscribe, leave a comment. That's awesome. It helps other people find the podcast. Hooray. If you want to talk further one-on-one or with me or set up a meeting, let's do that. I'll talk on Twitter at MeehanEDU. It's Meehan like my last name. M as in Mary, E-E-H-A-N as in Nancy. And EDU like teaching. So Meehan EDU, shoot me a message and we'll catch up while people honk at me on my walk. That's nice. I also have a website. It's www.adrenalinerush.com. It's adrenaline with an E, like educational adrenaline. I'm fired up to teach and I want to help people get fired up with the same stuff. So I have templates and resources and all sorts of multimedia. Borrow them, use them, steal them, change them, whatever you want to do. And let me know how I can help. We'll also have further conversation if you like. On my website, there's my full contact information. And I wrote a book called Adrenaline Rush, which is all about game-changing student engagement, inspired by theme parks, mud runs, and escape rooms. If that sounds like something you're interested in, cool. Let's check it out. Let's talk. I think you can read the first couple of chapters of the book on the internet for free. Amazing. But today, I want to get into the idea of change is the opportunity to do something amazing. And I want to talk to you about beer. How about that? I'm from New Jersey originally, but I know that America's oldest brewery is reportedly, allegedly, Yingling, which is located way up there. It's either Pottstown or Pottsville, Pennsylvania. I had a chance some years ago. My dad, it was an awesome Christmas gift. We came down for Christmas, and there inside of all of our stockings, there was a bottle of Yingling. If you've ever been to New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, like I guess the Northeast, Yingling is a pretty familiar beer there. Like if the middle of the country, I guess, like the, you know, or Colorado has the Rockies, like Coors Light, we have Yingling. And it's a big deal. So much of the people used to, I don't want to say steal it, but like steal it across state lines. So, you know, carry it and package it. If they came to New Jersey or they came to Pennsylvania, they would pack them in their cars, pack them in their pickup trucks, pack them underneath the seats, and just haul tail going back to their home because they didn't sell Yingling everywhere. It's like a regional beer. I don't pretend it's like the best beer in the world. It's a beer, but it's from America's oldest brewery, darn it. And some years ago for Christmas, my brothers and I came downstairs. Dad's like, hey, we got you all a bottle of beer. We're like, well, that's kind of a crappy gift. We could buy our own beer, Dad. He's like, no. It's a symbol. It's a clue. Because each of us had a bottle because we're going to the Yingling Brewery. And we had a chance to like do the factory tour up there, like I said, in Pottsville or Pottstown. I probably should do more research than just talking about beer and drinking every now and again, but roll with it here. It's a coronavirus, so it was a new normal podcast. So we did. We went to the Yingling Brewery up there in a town or a ville with the word pots in it. And we learned the story of this reputed America's oldest brewery. Now, does it really matter? Not really, because anybody can claim to be America's oldest anything, and it's really hard to vet that or suss that stuff out. But it's cool to walk in those footsteps and walk through that physical space and see, you know, just how old, how traditional this place is. Way back to the 1800s, the late 1800s, the Yingling family has owned this for four or five or six generations. It's a big deal. And they're very, very proud of, like, the culture and tradition of, hey, before we had refrigeration for cold storage, we had, like, these caves underneath the brewery. And we take all of the barrels, we take all of the, you know, like the product, and we move it down to these caves for like deep storage, and it stays really cold when you put it way underneath there. And then they tell us a story of, hey, and during Prohibition, because we were built in the 1800s, we had to keep our Yingling Brewery open. And that's hard to be America's oldest brewery when you're not allowed to buy, sell, or transport alcohol across state lines, right? So how does Yingling, the corporation, stay in business when they're not allowed to sell the one thing that they're famous for? So across the street from the Yuengling factory where the beer is, we see that there's a old stone facade, and it's the outside of, I guess, what was a temporary Yuengling facility, built in the early 1900s, like the 19-teens, 1920s, and it was the Yuengling, wait for it, ice cream parlor. In fact, in order to keep themselves open for the time of Prohibition, which they thought might be indefinite, right? Like, they didn't know that they were going to repeal the idea of, hey, just kidding, no drinking. Beer company, what do we do? So they pivoted. They pivoted and they had a drugstore and they had an ice cream parlor. Because an ice cream parlor, like, you know, way back in the 50s, kind of like that malt shop, you come in and at the druggist's counter, you can get a malted or you can get a sarsaparilla, a soda, and then you can also get your prescription filled. And that's exactly what Yuengling did. What's really interesting is when you walk through this physical space, you start to realize that it was not just a pivot for the company, but it was also a front so that they could still, oh yeah, just so happen to have tons of booze, you know, underneath and around if you just knew a guy and to make it happen, which is a fancy, fun way for alcohol to still be sold and distributed, even when that wasn't technically what they were supposed to do. Why does this matter? Why am I talking about booze on an education podcast? Not just because teachers have been working from home so long, 60 days, and we're like, I need a drink. No. The idea of Yuengling here for me is brilliant. In order to keep themselves alive as a corporation, in a time where they were told the new normal is you are not allowed to buy or sell or transport the thing that you are famous for, they had to adapt, they had to overcome, they had to pivot, and they had to do it fast. Sure, low-key, they had stuff set up where they can still sneak you the stuff that they really wanted to sneak you, but in order to keep themselves alive, in order to keep themselves brand relevant, in order to keep themselves legal, they had to do something different than they thought they were going to do. And I think this case study for schools and education outfits, orgs and, you know, districts or startups and charters really is a powerful, for me, metaphor for this time of COVID and shutdown, and then the idea of opening back up again. When we open back up again, next week we're going to spend the whole week talking about how do we open up again? What can that look like? Talk about the pros and the cons, the strengths, the fears, the all of the things that come up because we don't know, right? Like, we can take that apart blow by blow by blow next week, and we will. But I want to talk about this idea of a pivot and the idea of a functional change, because as an educator here in 2020, I thought teaching would look like X, just like as an alcohol distributor in 1920, I thought alcohol distribution would look like X. Well, surprise, it doesn't. It changed. Something is off, something is different, something is new, something is weird. How do we do the academic equivalent of opening up a liquor store that's not a liquor store, opening up an ice cream parlor or a pharmacy so that we have the ability to still get the product into the hands of the people who want it and need it, and knowing that the product that we're giving is a lot ways more valuable, a lot ways more healthy, a lot ways more safe, and a lot ways more necessary than alcohol. Because in the 19-teens, 1920s, the Yuengling Corporation could have very easily gone under. If they did not make that pivot, if they did not make that switch, they ran the risk of being obsolete and being driven out by an economy that did not owe them the chance to open up again to sell what they used to be selling. Now, it's true that there was still a need or a desire. I shouldn't say a need, but a need, a desire for the product. And so quietly, under the cover of nightfall, Yuengling was still able to get its product out to its loyal customers. So much so that when it came back years later, everybody was really, really excited because here we go, right? Finally, I can get my legal alcohol. Well, how do we do that? How do we set our schools up so that we pivot what we are offering and pivot the services that we provide in a time where shutdown is an everyday reality, but opening up will eventually be a reality too? What do we do? What are we offering to our students, to our schools, in our departments, in our classes, in our clubs, in our activities, where this is a thing that someone will be willing and excited to pay for? Not pay for necessarily in dollars and cents, but in their attention, in their taxes, in their support of our programs, because it might be a full year before we have any clubs, any sports, any activities. Until you have a vaccine, it may not be safe to put people in assemblies or school dances or class trips, right? All of these things cost money and they cost time and they cost resources and they cost attention to detail that we may not have. So how do we get ourselves ready for a big pivot? I realize I've asked a lot of questions, so maybe I should start with a few suggestions or ideas. Looking at our schools, looking at ourselves as educators, not of any one content area. I say that over and over again. We don't teach content. We use content to teach kids. What do kids need in this day and age? There have been so many schools who have seamlessly made the transition from everyone has to go into the building to learn and eat to, okay, no one's allowed to come in the building, but you're going to still learn at home and I'll get you food. I'll find a way to do that. There's only like 50 million school children, school-age children in the United States. There's something like 20 million of those same students who go without reliable meals every day. So the students who receive free and reduced meals and government assistance, they depend on going to schools to get fed. How many schools have said, all right, if you can't come in to get food, we will find a way to have contact-free drop-offs or available for pickup. And they just do it. They just figure out a way to do it because it's what needed to be done. How do we do that? How do we make those shifts? How do we make those changes? How do we as educators say, this is our priority. We have to now invest in where this thing is. And if that's what our school needs to be, suddenly you are a delivery service. You're not delivering food. You're delivering education in the way that they need it. But how do we deliver that? How do we make those shifts that, I don't know, I'm in an English class. Maybe an English class doesn't have to be reading and writing of like the great classics. Maybe an English class is rhetoric and analysis of just the news of the world. Maybe it becomes a politics class that's also talking about pop culture and blending together the things that our students are encountering in the day-to-day just with grade-level appropriate standards. We can slag on things like Common Core, and there are things that Common Core does poorly. But one of the things that Common Core does really well is it says, I don't care what book you read, you should be able to, from that book, pull out these skills. Whether you read it from The Great Gatsby or Invisible Man, Their Eyes Are Watching God, or The Scarlet Letter, you should be able to identify symbolism, identify character, subtext, read for deeper meaning, look for metaphor. Well, could we do that with stories from The New York Times versus The Washington Times? The New York Post versus The Washington Post? Could you do that with CNN up against MSNBC, up against Fox News, up against HuffPost or The Drudge Report? Having our students have something that they make and change and say, whoa, hang on, there's something that's going on here. Yep. So what do you see? What are you curious about? How can you use those critical reading skills to dig into a text and really squeeze that sponge for all the life that's there? That's exciting. That's what a politics class and an English class should have been all along, right? Maybe we don't teach the same books. Maybe we offer new services. So again, we pivot. That doesn't mean that we can't ever go back to ever teaching The Great Gatsby ever again. But for a year, maybe we learned, you know what? It wasn't so bad to do this. In fact, the kids really liked it. In fact, I as a teacher, I'm recharged by it. I'm refreshed by it. Selling ice cream for a year ain't the worst thing in the world. If it keeps me open, if it keeps our schools excited. Likewise, if you're in a school or a department that has, I don't know, a counseling department, how much more marketable are you as a school if you say, hey, what it means to have counselors on staff at our school is we're going to check in with every kid in the building every single week. And every kid's going to get a chance to have a 15 to 20 minute conference call with their counselors just to make sure they're okay, checking in with mental health awareness. How much more safe and supported will the people in your neighborhood be knowing that there's an adult who's calling and checking in for welfare checks, just like a personal trainer would? Hey, how you feeling? How you doing? Last week you talked about this. What are your goals looking like? What are your dreams looking like? How are you feeling about stress? Are you feeling sick? Like, if you deal with your own mental health counselors, we're in the month of May. I deal with a mental health counselor. Every Thursday, I put a call on the list. And every Thursday, I know for an hour at 3:30, I'm just going to talk to my mental health counselor and just like unpack my brain. It's going to get me a moment where I can focus on me. And I feel bad because I'm like complaining. And she says, hey, this is my job. I hope you're better. I mean, I hope you feel safe. I hope you feel supported. And you know that you can talk to me about anything. There's no judgment here. I don't seek for you to be unhealthy or unwell and feel bad about yourself. But if you need to call and you need to complain, you need to cry, I'm here for that. And then once a week, I don't have to worry about crying on Tuesdays or crying on Fridays because I'm like, oh, I have my call. It's going to be on Thursday. Put it in that box for a little bit of time, get the other work done. Could we support our students in that exact same way? Hey guys, your counselors will call in you regularly, checking in with you. And that's not just for like guidance counseling. That's just like, no, life counseling. How you doing? Applying to colleges, freaking out about COVID, trying to figure out how to not stay stir crazy in your house. This is what schools can provide us. Again, that pivot to maybe not selling alcohol, but selling ice cream in a way that makes our people feel safe and supported. And again, I'm just thinking about kicking around ideas here before we get into the nitty gritty. Next week, we'll talk about all the different phases of reopening, what that could look like with more detail. But as Dr. Fauci and the rest of the world are talking about, don't know if it's a bridge too far to reopen, we have to figure out what we do to stay relevant, to stay real, to stay authentic, and to stay safe. And that's our job, and that's why it's called a job, and that's what we're here to do. So I'm here for it. I would love to hear thoughts from you about this stuff. Like I said, I keep taking conference calls. I don't pretend to be an expert. I just pretend to be a person who's tied up in calls about this stuff all the time. So let's talk further. Let's consult together. Hit me up on the Twitter machine at MeehanEDU. Stay safe. Stay home. And we'll talk again tomorrow. Thanks again.